Hey, ding-dongs, I'm Jamie.
I'm Richard.
And this is Explain It to Jamie, the political comedy podcast in which I, Jamie, a politically innocent fella from Toronto, Canada, have the complicated political happenings of the world explained to me by my best friend, Richard Lamb. Rico, how's it going?
It's going great, Jamie. I am the busiest I've maybe ever been in my life. You know what really, at the end of a long week, nothing makes me want to unwind more than talking about complicated political, historical, and philosophical ideas.
I know you, man. I know you. I know what you like. That's why I'm here.
This is my jam.
Yeah, this podcast is purely for your relaxation. Yep.
Some people go to like the Nordic spa where they dip in a warm hot tub full of like basil leaves, and then they lie on a hot stone rock and then like get cheese grated in their back.
Yeah, that's what I and most people like.
But me, I like to crack open those deep philosophical texts, those arcane political tracts, those technocratic constitutional documents, and I just like the words are the saunas to me, if you know what I mean.
Oh, I know what you mean, buddy. Well, I don't know what you mean, but very few people in the world do.
To me, a sauna is a sauna.
But actually, not knowing what you mean is the whole point we're here.
Indeed.
Because I am Jamie, and if this is your first time listening to Explain It to Jamie, effectively, world's complicated, guys. Politics are nuts, and I need a way in. I, like many people, don't have a degree in this stuff, and Richard is my gatekeeper here.
Yeah, another way to think of it is, like, if you get curious about something and you just decide to Google it, you're very quickly going to be attacked with a series of complicated and bizarre words that seem to mean nothing, and you feel like you have to get an undergraduate degree just to understand a news article sometimes.
Yeah, not to mention every time you Google anything, yet another tracking tag of the internet gets like pierced into your ear.
Yeah. And you Google economics one time and your fucking YouTube algorithm is going to be like literally the inside of Pandora's box. There's just going to be howling demons coming at you. Like, it starts with the men and the Lamborghinis who are like, I'm going to teach you how to do real estate right now. And then like literally two clicks later, it's like you're learning about how the white race is dying. And then two clicks after that, it's like, there's like, you're like, you know, cutting a swastika into your own forehead in jail.
Yeah, so we're here to save you a few clicks and
some jail time.
A lifetime in prison.
That's right.
So this week, we're doing the topic of China. Correct,
yes,
Richard?
That's right. So, like, literally, Jamie and I... Even I, at this point, an amateur bordering on semi-professional dork, even I can get it over my head sometimes. So this week we were like, hey, it would be cool if we did an episode on China. That's probably a good idea.
Yeah, and so we strapped our wax wings onto our backs.
and we we were like, China's that big glowing thing in the sky. Let's just point ourselves towards it and see what happens.
Yeah. And here we are, tumbling to our deaths.
Yeah, so I learned very quickly that we were going to probably have to do a multi-episode series on China. Basically, when I got to the point where it's like, what is China? And then it was like, well, China is a Confucian society and has been like, you know, it's like very influenced by Confucian societies. And I was like, oh, I'll probably have to explain some of what this is. And then as I began to read about Confucius, I was like, oh, fuck, this is a whole episode. So, you know, you came for the what is electoral reform episode, and now you're about to learn about some like pre-Christ Chinese philosophy.
Hell yeah,
yeah,
baby.
Get ready.
Hell yeah.
Like, throw this on as you're getting ready to go to the club, because it is fucking getting turnt in here tonight.
Oh, I can't wait. Well, okay, China part one, Confucianism.
Yeah, what is Confucianism?
The beginning. Hey, I love it. What say we kick into this theme song and then hop back on the China train?
I say, Confucius say, let's go!
Go, go, go! First of all, I immediately regret saying the China train,
okay,
only because of historical shittiness.
For those of you who don't know us personally, and also this is audio, so you don't know necessarily what we look like, it's probably like worth mentioning that I, Richard, am ethnically Chinese.
Yeah. So when he says all the racist shit he's about to say, I don't want to hear fucking squat from you peasants.
That's right. Because I'm a Canadianized Chinese person, it means I can't be racist against Chinese people. Just like how you can't commit a crime against yourself.
That's right. So you social justice warriors, hang up your keyboards. I don't want to hear it.
Yeah, that's right. Okay, so Jamie, do you know anything about Confucianism?
Literally nothing, except for the fact that he was Aristotle's cousin?
No. That was a good try.
Hey, man. He falls into that category for me. I go, oh, yeah, old person that held court among other people who are now dead.
And that's hella accurate. Like, that's really accurate. Similar to like, kind of like all those people in the Western philosophical canon, Confucius is like the dude who everyone attributes the kind of like founding ideology of modern China on, or like China through its history. And like, it's important to be specific about like what that means and how it works and all of that stuff. But it's like a really, the reason I thought this was like worth a whole episode and really interesting is because not only are we going to like learn a little bit about what Confucianism is and how it shapes China, but I think it's cool to talk about like what the ideas that actually shaped our society are too, how they're different from Confucianism. Ooh. And like what those big, those things that are like so, like this is how it, to make it make sense for me, is like there are actually some ideas in our society that we take for granted so much because they're the foundational ideas of our society that are not actually like universal.
Right. And this is some Rick and Morty alternate universe.
That's right, man. Yeah. I'm going to take you to the world where Canada was founded by birds.
Oh, okay.
So does that sound good?
Wait, is China Canada if it was founded by birds?
Wow. Way to just out us. Now the Chinese government is definitely going to abduct us immediately and murder us. Like, we can't just out their entire conspiracy, Jamie.
Yeah, my bad. Operation Chicken the China, the Chinese chicken.
If anyone's listening, I said that.
Oh, God.
It's already begun.
Yeah. Okay. So, Confucius. Where was he born?
Confucius was from a part of China that was called, like, Lu, or it's like the Lu region, or okay, Confucius, he lived in about 500 BC or so.
Okay.
A time in China called the Warring States period. So China is like kind of a weird country in that, unlike basically every other country in the world, and every other ancient country in the world, like the United States, Canada, like modern countries, quote unquote, are like this, but there was never a like rupture in its history. We never like lost tons of knowledge from China the way that we did with like Rome or, you know, Mesopotamia or like ancient civilizations. Right. In every ancient civilization in like Europe and stuff like that, there's like kind of lost historical knowledge, but China both developed a civilization that was like extremely intense about record keeping and specifics, and then like did not really lose that thread, even though China has existed in the same place in some kind of form for so long that like there's a joke in China that like you cannot, it's like easier to like not find extremely valuable ancient historical artifacts than to find them. That's like a thing people say there. Wow. It's like you cannot put a shovel in the ground in China without like unearthing some incredibly rare ancient historical thing. Wow. Just because people have lived on the same ground literally for like thousands and thousands of years.
Sure, well, they got that wall there.
To the wall specifically is the main thing.
Yeah, that was the first thing someone found with a shovel.
Yeah.
Like, tink, tink, what the?
So Confucius was from the 500-ish BC in China, which was a period called the Warring States period. So China was not always one nation. Over the years, it has been like very like large and almost like resembling what it resembles now, like the modern China we're familiar with. But it's also been like broken up into as many as like 14 or 15 different like little countries ruled by warlords and stuff over its years.
Right.
And the period at which Confucius was born was like one of the most fragmented and intense versions of this.
Right.
And so he was born in, I don't know what city he was born in.
Interesting. I'm just sort of bringing it back to the like stick a shovel in the ground and find an ancient artifact thing. I was just talking with a Polish friend of mine, and he was saying something very similar about like Poland and Eastern Europe.
Yeah,
they're constantly like riverbeds are drying up and stuff, and they're finding like Ottoman Empire, like memorabilia. Or,
Not
memorabilia, but
like souvenirs. Like,
just like a big foam finger.
Just like fidget spinners. I heart the pre-modern Turks, like,
but
shirts.
But that's like an old part of the world. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, it's a... obviously, you notice it when you go to Europe, you go to London and stuff like that. You go, oh, there's a column that's 2,000 years old or something.
But yeah.
When I went to Indonesia, I know it's not China, but you see these temples that are, 3,000 years old. Mm-hmm. You go, oh, yeah, this is an old part of the world. It seems so obvious, but from a North American point of view, we don't get anything like that.
Totally. And I mean, like, let's take a just quick second to acknowledge the, like, kind of colonial dynamic at play there too, where, like, there has been civilization and people here for a very long time.
Sure.
It just didn't really resemble those, like, large scale civilizations, mostly because of, like, resources and the ways that people lived here and sustainably lived here did not require, like, massive and huge settlements and huge pillars and huge temples
absolutely.
And things like that. So those things, and the traces of their existence are found very often, ancient First Nations things are dispersed through much of Canada and are found often.
Yes.
But yes, it's true that, like, what we in the West, like, identify as civilization, like big ass statues and like pots and shit, those come a lot more from places where that civilization existed kind of like long ago on the same ground. This is new ground for us, literally.
Totally, totally. Good correction.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway, so...
But yes, so it was a tough period in China's history. There was still, like, theoretically, like, a central government, but in practice, like, whoever was the boss of, like, the region kind of controlled everything. So it would be, like, in a way, you could think of it like in Canada.
Saudi Arabia?
No, not like Saudi Arabia. Uh-huh. I'm trying to think of what it would be more like. Like, imagine Canada now. Or the United States, say, and it's like there is still the main government, like Justin Trudeau or Donald Trump or whatever is the fucking president, but it's like every state was actually just run by whoever the guy is who runs the state or the province.
Right.
You know, it's like Justin Trudeau can give an order, but nobody fucking listens. And like, you know,
your currency has no value, only the power you hold.
Yeah, exactly. So it's like Justin Trudeau's like, everyone has to like put this tax down, and Doug Ford is like, yeah, okay, I'll do it, and then just does whatever the fuck he wants, which honestly is kind of what's happening anyway. like reading about all this stuff is like a little bit of a mindfuck, because you're like, oh my god, we've learned nothing. Yeah, is this how it happens? I should also say, you may have noticed, Confucius is like a weird name for a Chinese person, right? It doesn't sound very Chinese.
I had never even thought about that.
Yeah.
It sounds like Latin. Like,
It is Latin.
Right.
So Confucius is the Latin name for this Chinese guy whose name is actually like
Billy
Kung
Hong
Fu
or something like that. Oh, yeah.
Like Kung Fu Zi.
Kung Fu. Oh. Yeah.
So it's like, but like, that's just a thing that we have allowed to pass into our common usage and like not really even stopped and thought about. Like, I also had that same reaction where it's like, why is his name Confucius? Yeah.
Kung Fu Zi.
Yeah.
Wow, he's just a big kung fu fan.
I know. Yeah. He actually also invented kung fu. It's like a little known fact.
Oh, he did?
No, he didn't.
Oh, okay. No, you can't do this. Because I don't know.
Okay, so basically, Confucius is...
And he was a panda.
He was a magical flying panda.
Sure.
Confucius is super interesting because he takes a look at this kind of like decentralized, fucked up state, and it like really pisses him off.
Okay.
And he kind of creates this philosophy over his life about like how things should function in order for everything to work correctly, like society.
Right.
But it goes all the way from like, it's the reason it's endured for so long and is kind of, it has deeply shitty and problematic elements, but also it's endured a lot because like all good philosophy, it's sort of interpretable. Like it leaves a lot of ambiguities for you to kind of like fill it with your own interpretation, kind of like Confucius is the tea bag and you put your own water in it, you know, depending on who you are and where you come from.
Sure.
And also, it's a really interesting system that is pretty total in that it's like, here's how society should work, and then here's what each person has to do in order to make that work. So it's pretty prescriptive about how you can like literally act in order to make society good.
Okay, so hold on, wait, we need to slow down.
Yeah.
So he sees that they have maybe an unstable way of structuring their state.
Sorry, let me be clear. This period of China is called the Warring States period. So yes, there's like a central guy who's like in charge of the government, but it doesn't work. It's actually just like all these different people jockeying for power who control little chunks of China.
Is there an emperor?
It wasn't an emperor this time. Okay. That comes later on.
All right.
I'm trying to think right now. The very first like dynasty that proclaimed themselves the emperor. I'm like a little vague on this. I'm so not like one of these people who knows the Chinese stuff, but I think it was the Qin dynasty. The very first one, and it was pretty short. And there were like the term emperor only started getting used, I think, some Chinese scholar, please correct me, but I think it was with the Han dynasty, which is after Confucius. And actually they're the ones who like really brought Confucius to the big leagues, so to speak.
And emperor, that's another word that's not Chinese.
Yeah. But I think that's more of, I mean, obviously, it's like a translation.
Empire.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I see.
And like people just called the ruler different stuff, even when it, practically speaking, functioned kind of the same as like the empire did.
Right.
Like people just used different words or different terms that have been translated differently over the years.
Sure.
I should also say I don't actually speak Chinese, even though I'm claiming Chinese-ness all over this podcast to defend my like mildly racist jokes.
Sure.
So take that with a grain of salt too. For the purposes of the knowing the Chinese of this podcast, I'm just another stupid dude.
Great. that makes two.
Okay, so in the Warring States period, this is what I was trying to say. The Warring States period, even though I just made it sound like it's like, no, this guy's making his own laws. There was like violence and chaos, right? Like it was like all the time. It was like, this guy's trying to take this piece of my land into his. It was like Rachel Notley is trying to take this chunk of BC. So we're just going to send a bunch of fucking soldiers there. We're all going to fight each. Like we're going to take these guys out of their jobs, go send them to fight and die because we're pissing match with Rachel Notley over Revelstoke.
Right, you know what I mean?
And so like it's just like violence a lot of the time. Like crops rotting in the fields because like people keep getting pulled away from planting things to go fight in stupid wars because all the warlords are fighting over shit with each other.
Right.
So this is what Confucius is looking at and being like, this is absurd and like does not need to happen. It's like pointless violence, and it's all happening because no one is listening to the central government who's trying to regulate everything, but they're all just kind of like doing their own thing. Everything's broken down. Like the way that the society is supposed to function is broken down. It's causing like chaos and violence.
Right. So he doesn't like this. And so he sits down and comes up with, he looks up to the sky and dreams up, I got it, Kung Fu Shin-ism.
like in a sense, yeah.
Yeah.
And the thing is, like, what's really interesting, what he actually came up with.
Right.
It should be said too, like much like with a lot of the ancient Greek philosophers, we don't actually have any of Confucius's actual writing. His like the main text in Confucianism is called the Analects, which is like kind of like a bunch of anecdotes of Confucius talking about stuff that are written from memory by his like students.
Sure.
Kind of like the New Bible. Testament. Exactly. Yeah. Like Jesus never wrote anything down. It's all the apostles. These are kind of like his apostles. Confucius like had a low level government job at the time. Then he had to go on a year of mourning because
apostles. I've never heard anyone really pronounce the T in that word.
Is it apostles?
Apostles. That's what I've always said.
I'm like non-religious also. That's like the fourth time in my life I maybe have said that word out loud.
That's like totally symptomatic of someone that's read the word.
That's
but
totally
never,
me.
Said,
yeah. Anyway, so in his like mid-20s, Confucius is working as like a low-level government guy. He comes from a poor but still noble family. Uh-huh. He has to go on a year of mourning because his mom dies, so he has to like leave his job for a year and like be in mourning.
Right.
And during that time, he actually just like gives up the job, and he's like, he comes up with these kind of like ideas of how to structure society, and he goes off and tries to find a ruler who's going to like put it into place.
Right.
But nobody kind of wants to hear him out. They're all too busy fighting with each other. So he comes back. He comes back to where he's from, and he starts this school where he's like he's just going to teach kind of these concepts to people and these modes of behavior to people. He ends up teaching. His school ends up like gaining a lot of prominence. Lots of like high level people send their kids to be educated by Confucius, and he teaches probably like they say about 3,000 students over his life.
So very similar to Plato and Aristotle.
Exactly. So similar model.
When When did you say the time? What's the time?
500 BC. So I think he exists around the same time as like Buddha. He's alive about the same time as Buddha.
Can you imagine if they had Instagram back then?
Oh my God, like, those guys
each other's stuff.
And it's like that one time when it's like, yeah, they like cross put, like it's like Confucius would comment on Buddha's Instagram, and then it would be like fucking headlines. You
yeah,
know?
Totally.
Yeah, CP24 would be like Confucius commented on Buddha's Instagram today. Yeah. It looks like a double prayer hands emoji. Yeah.
Oh man,
I hate the modern world.
If only we had cell phones back then.
Yeah.
Yeah. Think of all we're missing.
Do you ever think that, like, you know what we just said about, like, unearthing ancient archaeology in under the ground of, like, places that I lived in? Do you ever think that's, like, the internet will be like that one day where it's, like...
They just, like, turn it on and they're, like, whoa, we get to see everything that this civilization...
Yeah, it was kind of interesting. Or, like, will there be an equivalent of, like, trolling through the internet for, like, old stuff?
Potentially. Yeah. Potentially. I mean, there's, like, huge investments now in these big permanent memory... stations that right. are like, because you want, like, we have the cloud now, and that's like obviously changed business, but like we you still want a hard copy of everything. Mm-hmm. So these big impenetrable memory stations that have like 50 years of power just built in, plus solar panel, you know, like they're built to stay online in the worst possible scenario. So
right.
theoretically we could wipe ourselves out and those things could run forever.
Huh.
Yeah.
Crazy.
Little treasure chests for aliens.
Yeah. And
look at all my dick pics.
That's what they want, probably.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe if Confucius's dick pics like would have existed 100%. Although, yeah, well, it's an open question, maybe. So
he was hanging
around. He teaches like 3,000 people in his life. Out of those 3,000, like 72 are like his like prize students, and they're the ones who like put together this book called The Analects. Mm-hmm. And then a couple hundred years later, like 100, 150 years later, there's this other dude who's like another Confucian guy named Mencius, who like loves Confucius. This must also be his Latin name, although I don't know what his Chinese name is.
Yeah.
So Mencius is the one who, like, he like, clarifies a lot of what Confucius's thought is. Because the Analects are, like, this kind of infamously, like, weird book. They're sort of, like, random anecdotes and not really in any logical order.
Like the Cimmerillion of
100%, yeah. So Mencius is actually the one who, like, really makes these kind of ideas clearer, sets out a lot of... what we call Confucianism. A lot of what is called Confucianism is like just created by Mencius,
uh-huh.
who is like kind of an inheritor of the tradition of Confucianism long after Confucius's death.
Right.
Kind of like the way that like Plato's Republic is like about, who's the other guy? Oh my God. This is like first year university for me. But Plato's Republic is like a dialogue between, fuck, who is his name? It's like another Socrates. Socrates is like the main character in Plato's Republic.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So like, it's all about Socrates like engaging in all these dialectics with people and like having these philosophical kind of like two-way arguments with people. And Plato's the one who's like communicating it all, but in a way like. But it is Plato's philosophy, but he's kind of using Socrates as this kind of like vehicle or. That's kind of like what Mencius
right.
did.
So he's like live tweeting.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. That's right. Yeah, it's like the original Instagram Live.
Yeah, man. Hey, we know who our base is. We got to play to them.
That's right.
21-year-olds or whatever.
Yeah.
No, I haven't looked.
That's right. All the cool kids. They can't understand anything unless you make like app references.
Yeah.
Anyway, Confucius. What did he actually come up with?
I'm asking you
right now because this is the end of my research. So you hear a lot that Confucius, like, it's like, oh, these are China, Japan, Korea, Taiwan, Hong Kong, Vietnam. These are Confucian societies. They're influenced by Confucius. And that's true. So what the hell did he actually say? And like, what did that end up meaning in real world terms? Confucius like creates all these ideas in about, like I said, 500 BC, but it's not until like 300-400 years later that like governments were like, this is our thing now. We're making a government modeled on Confucianism. You know, kind of like, I mean, like Karl Marx, you know, writes in the mid-1800s, but the first communist country doesn't appear until Russia has its revolution in 1917.
Mm.
Right?
Okay,
so it's like, it takes time. And I mean, this is even way more time than that. But Confucianism, like, stays alive as an idea and then finally enters the mainstream several hundred years later.
Right.
Yeah. So what
it's like us, like, going back, grabbing all of George Bernard Shaw's books and being like, we're doing the George Bernard Shaw government.
Now. Yeah, exactly. Which was, let's be clear, socialism.
100 years.
Yeah, yeah. let's not pull any punches about that.
No.
So Confucius basically conceives of every single person, like every individual person, as is like a moral actor inside like a larger framework of society. And it's each individual person's duty to like act morally in all of the different ways, in all the different relationships that they have in society in order to make everything like flow smoothly. Mm-hmm. But this is kind of like, this is already an important distinction from
like heaven and hell.
Yeah, this is what's interesting is Confucianism is not a religion because it doesn't really deal with like metaphysical concepts like that. It doesn't deal with afterlives.
Like
it's not about spirit. Yeah. It's like a practical real world guide for making things work correctly. There is this really confusing term that's used in China where they talk about heaven. Like for a long time, the word for China was all under heaven. But like heaven doesn't mean heaven like it means in the Western world, in the Christian tradition, it's not like the afterlife or like paradise. Mm-hmm. It's like, it's just like kind of like the celestial kingdom. And it kind of embodies like God and goodness and humanity.
Sure.
You know what I mean? Like it's like
many, I got to say, many Christians would argue that that's what like the Christian Bible also says.
Right.
It's just like the people who, you know, people really interpret it as it's a place you go, but I was always taught growing up, I'm not Christian anymore, but what I was taught growing up was it's a point of view. It's
right.
Like it's, you can be in heaven right now. You can be in, you know what I mean? Like it's all positive action thing. But I don't know that,
I'm not an expert in this piece of translation and it's like weird and complicated and tough to pull apart. It was part of the enduring like popular imagery in China, still is part of the enduring popular imagery in China. So Confucius makes reference to it, but it's not about that.
Right.
It's like, it's a real world guide. It's about, it's honestly, and like we haven't done this episode yet either, but it's a lot more like Jordan Peterson than it is anything else. It's like, here's how you like lead a good life and make society work correctly.
Mm-hmm.
It's not about spiritual stuff, but it is moral. So it does deal with like, your character.
It's like Tony Robbins.
Yeah, it's like that. It's like original, it's like OG self-help.
Right, straight up. Yeah, yeah.
So basically Confucius says like the way to create social harmony is to act correctly in all of the fundamental relationships in your life. And he says it's important to respect like hierarchies because there are hierarchies in society and you have to respect them and defer to them. And as long as everyone plays their correct role, then everything will be okay. And there's like five different roles that he identifies. There's the most important ones are all about the family because he like for and families are crazy important in Confucian societies. This is like the main thing that people use to identify them. They're very family oriented societies.
I've seen Mulan.
yeah. But then you need. Then you. I have nothing more to teach you.
But like
as Confucius
joke,
would say, all you need is a girl worth fighting for.
Yeah, but you must be
swift as a coursing river.
Be a man.
Yeah.
But in Mulan, she's like, you know, there. I shouldn't start any sentence like that. In Mulan, it's all about the family. It's all about the last name. It's about the pride and honor of the lineage.
And that movie is filtered through a super Disney Western lens, obviously, but that's a good entry point into thinking about what this mindset is. Because, like, basically, imagine if, and this is where it's cool to talk about, like, our society. So in our society, you're, like, an individual human, and you have a family, and, you know, family is important, but fundamentally, our society views us each as kind of, like, a single building block of the society, and it's like your choices and preferences and your actualization are the most important thing at the end of the day. You can choose to have a relationship with your family, or you cannot choose to have a relationship with your family. You know, you could kind of forge your own path in life and kind of create the way that you want, guided by your own interests and what you feel you want to do, your own desires, sure. right? And it's like the opposite in Confucianism. In Confucianism, it's like the family is like the fundamental unit of society, both literally and kind of as a metaphor. Right. It's like society is a big family. So it's like, and that kind of comes from this idea that like you honor filial piety. This is another like very common buzzword that you associate with Confucianism, which means like honoring your parents and respecting your parents. And that kind of comes in a sort of philosophical way as like you're respecting like the source of life. Like you were created by people, by something that is not you. You did not create yourself. You were created, and you should like be deeply respectful always to that.
To those who created you.
Yeah, and you're respectful to them as humans, but by being respectful to them, you're also respecting like your life itself and your fundamental humanity and like the time that you get in the world.
Great.
Yeah, so basically, and that's what I mean, where it's like there's parts of this philosophy where I'm like, I can totally fuck with this. This is cool.
Yeah, yeah.
But then like it is a hella, it's a hella like conservative and kind of reactionary philosophy as well. It actually kind of was the original make China great again.
Right.
Because he was like, again, he's in this warring states period where everything's crazy. He was like, okay, I think that things were better in this older period of China. So how do we get back to here? Like this was his idea.
Right.
Yeah. So as I was saying, there's like five kinds of relationships that he identifies. Three of them are our family relationships. So there's like, and also it's super sexist. This is like another problem right. with Confucianism. And you, but like, you know that China is insanely sexist, right? Mm. You know, there's,
I didn't know that.
Oh, well, this is a thing about...
I did know that.
In many of these Confucian countries, women were, like, totally locked out of many parts of public life and relegated into the, like, home for hundreds and hundreds of years. Mm. This is starting to sort of change now in the modern era, but it changed significantly later than in Western countries. And this is because of the lasting... effect of Confucianism, because Confucianism makes a super hard divide between the sexes. And this is another thing. This is actually, it was written out by Confucius, left a little bit ambiguous, and then further defined by other thinkers, like as the decades and centuries went on. People right. were like, no, women should be in the house, men should be out doing the stuff.
Right, just like what happened to the Bible.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, or like Islam was or the same, Islam, as we've talked about in the past, you know? Anyway, so the three kinds of relationships are like...
Doesn't it make you think, like, I mean, this isn't to equate what you and I are talking, like, are doing here to some, like, great religious thinker, but isn't it, like, crazy to think that we could, you know, we could go on for 5 years doing this podcast, create a body of work, and 200 years from now, a group of people could find it and, like, just love it. And think it's so great and rewrite it. And think, no, Richard wouldn't have said this. Richard actually meant this when he said this. And And then this whole branch.
And then people build an entire government based on those thinkings. I mean, that's literally how it happens.
Yeah,
and that's
yeah.
why it is like crazy to think of these modern day thinkers like the Jordan Petersons and like the Tony Robbins of the world. And like imagine somebody taking their words that seriously. You know?
Yeah, yeah.
It's a bit of a mind fuck.
Wow. Oh, man.
Anyway. The three family relationships that Confucius talks about are father-son,
sure,
older brother, younger brother, and husband-wife.
Yeah.
Right? Again, you may be noticing a pattern of sorts here.
So I'm waiting for the sexist bit, right?
So in all of these cases, like, there's a hierarchy, right?
Mm.
And these are Confucius's words, not mine. You know, I'm woke, everybody. Don't write me. Please write me.
Yeah.
In all these cases, there's like a superior person and an inferior person. And the inferior person is supposed to recognize the superiority of the superior person and defer to them. So the wife is supposed to defer to the husband's will. The son is supposed to defer to the father's will. Yeah. The younger brother is supposed to defer to the older brother's will.
Right.
And this
the daughters, they just open the back door and let them out into the woods.
What daughters?
This really wasn't paying for that one child.
Yeah, this
policy,
no,
right?
This is exactly what I'm talking about. Yeah. Like this was a real thing where because opportunities for women were considered so small, and you know, as you know, it's that funny thing where, like, hundreds of years ago, when you make a decision to lock women out of the public sphere in many ways, then society just grows up thinking that women are less valuable. And so when China instituted a one-child policy because their population was growing so quickly and taxing their resources, people were, like, getting rid of their daughters because they wanted a son, right?
Yeah.
They wanted to have a son who is, you know, affords them much more access to the society. But then it caused a massive demographic crisis where women became incredibly rare, comparatively speaking.
Yeah.
This is the legacy of Confucianism, one of them.
Yeah,
anyway, so the deferential person in the relationship has to recognize the superiority of the superior person, but then the superior person has a responsibility to, like, do good at being a role model and, like, caring for that person.
Sure.
And so deference flows upwards and, like, responsibility and care flows downwards, right? And then this basic, like, hierarchy is applicable to everything. So it's like, there's also an age thing where it's like elders are supposed to, like, be role models and be cared for by like the parent generation, who are supposed to be role models and care for the children, who are supposed to defer to all of those people and learn how to be good adults. Like, that's society working the way that it should work.
Right.
And Confucius was big on being nice to your elders. He thought that was a really important thing.
Oh, that's great. What are the other What are the other two relationships?
So they're ruler subject.
Oh yeah.
And yeah. So already you can see, like, oh, this is a little bit different from modern democracy.
Sure. Enter communism.
Yeah. Oh, so ruler subject, where again it's like, if you're the king, you're supposed to rule your subjects well, and if you're the subject, you're supposed to, like, be cool with getting ruled well.
Make the boss look good.
Yeah. So, and then the other one, this is the only one that breaks the mold, is friend and friend.
Hey.
And it's the only one where it's equal, and, like, love and support is supposed to flow evenly between you both.
Right, but women aren't allowed to be in friends, right?
I mean, what's funny about that is, it's one of those things that's so sexist, it's actually sort of equal, because it doesn't assume a gender. I assume because it assumes that only men have friends. No,
right.
That's actually not true. I think that it would say that women would probably have friends too and should uphold the same Confucian values. You know, women still were supposed to practice Confucianism.
Right.
Yeah.
They just have less things to do.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. Right. They don't have a lot of agency in the same way.
Yeah. Okay.
But their authority would flow downwards to their children the same way that, you know, other people's would. That's the same way that the fathers would.
Right.
It's just that they defer to the father. Everyone has a place in the Confucian hierarchy.
Right.
You could clearly define who you're above and who you're below, who you're supposed to be supporting and who you're supposed to be obeying.
Mm-hmm.
That's part of the appeal of it.
Right.
And that was, I think, a direct response to Confucius seeing everything breaking down and being so crazy.
Right.
Now, this is kind of a fucked up model for society.
I know what you mean. I'm sold.
Let's do it. Sign me up.
Yeah.
I just got, like, a nightmare vision of, like, that episode of Black Mirror where everyone rates each other and, like, everyone has a visible rating.
This is why I don't go on social media anymore. It's because I actually am, like, I feel that already is true.
But that's a really good, we'll come back to that metaphor, actually, because that metaphor will be useful later on when we talk about how Confucianism still exists in the modern world.
Right, okay.
So there's a couple interesting implications of this. One is that, in this system, so people often say, like, I saw somebody kind of being roasted on Twitter the other day because they were like, monarchy is not a bad system, you just need good monarchs, right? And everyone's like, actually, that's exactly why monarchy is a bad system.
Yeah, you know?
But the thing is, Confucius was attempting to, within a monarchy situation, like, create a system in which you always had good monarchs, or you tried to, like, create education for monarchs to, like, know what their responsibilities were. And so you'd hope, if it all worked correctly, you'd have, like, people taking the throne who knew what they were supposed to be doing and how to rule well.
Right.
Like, because a lot of it is about personal morality. Mm. Like, Confucianism follows the golden rule. That's like the number one thing you find. It's like, what is Confucianism? It's do unto others what you would have them do unto you. Mm-hmm. Like, that's like one of the main things about it. Confucianism is also like optimistic about human nature, which is literally the opposite of our civilization, which is founded on Judeo-Christian kind of values where we're all tainted with original sin or whatever.
Yeah.
In Confucianism, it's like, people have generally a good spirit that must be cultivated and brought out. And again, it's an untranslatable term, but kind of like holding on to your fundamental like empathy, humanness, the kind of spirit in you that like feels a kindred human spirit with another human and wants to help and support them. Mm. That's like the spark that should be nurtured in people through education and experience.
Oh my God, did Russell Brand just walk through here?
I know, right?
Like, talk into the microphone?
This is what I'm saying, where it's like, oh, interesting. There's parts of this philosophy that are kind of dope, and there's parts of it that it's like, no, there's no women.
Yeah.
You know? Like it's like also all about obeying the king. Like, that's weird.
Right. This is sort of an overused thing, but it was also of a time where that was like totally cool. You know, it's not like he was blowing people's minds to be like, you know, but like, let's leave the ladies out of this. You know what I mean?
At the same time, like, it's hard. You can give him a pass for writing within his context, but his writings and these ideas also like became deeply frozen into society and remain to this day. Like, you know, the kind of negative effects on those things remain to this day.
Right.
But again, what's interesting is, you know, in our society, we have kind of a confrontation between individualism and kind of like enlightenment rationalism, which are the philosophies behind our society, which like in a nutshell say like each of us has an individual seed of humanity that has the potential to grow in all kinds of different ways, and society should help people reach its fullest potential. Like, that's kind of like the gist of that. Mm. And you'd recognize that as kind of like there's many things in our society that work in that way. And feminism is like a logical extension of that idea. You know, all men are created equal and deserve life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Obviously, they wrote men when they wrote that into the Declaration of Independence, but the idea that all people are equal and they all deserve an equal shot at fulfilling their humanness, like, feminism actually flows from that idea, right? It's like, at the time they created it, they had a deeply unequal society, but when you started to call people on that and be like, yo, we promise this equal society, like, why, like, yeah, this woman, like, this woman could be
equal.
Just as brilliant a nuclear physicist as this man, and it's stupid that we're not letting them do, like, we're ignoring half of our human potential here,
right?
But that philosophical concept does not exist in Confucianism, right? The idea that your innate potential for the expression of your talents should be completely fully used does not exist for women.
I'm going to blow your mind right now.
Hit me.
With a little factoid I picked up.
Yeah.
So, China developed porcelain.
Right.
And this was a massive technological discovery at the time that they did it. They could, you know, they could hold liquids and things in cups very cheaply and get it, and very sturdily or whatever.
Yeah.
And it worked so good that they didn't bother starting making glass.
Right.
And that thing stood in the way of them developing lens technology, and that was one of the reasons that Western lens technology shot through the roof, and one of the reasons that Chinese lens technology lagged behind or whatever.
Right.
In the same, I mean, and you can choose point that out at any object in history. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like,
we made this decision instead of this decision, and it affected us in this way. This is totally Rick and Morty talk, you know, just a different decision.
Yeah, that's cool.
But like, yeah.
I mean, it's interesting to think that all technological innovation is essentially born from like necessity and pressure. If you don't need to innovate, you probably won't.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, yeah, so
that's
so
what,
there is.
That's what Tesla's fucking taking on.
Yeah, that's because we're all dying.
Dude, yeah. I mean, they're dominating the luxury car market. Yeah. We just did Elon Musk a few weeks ago. If you guys are interested about Elon Musk, go check out that episode.
Yeah. So it is like a deeply sexist philosophy. But again, the sexism isn't necessarily inherent to some of the cooler ideas in the philosophy. If you just were like let's just make, you could probably redo, you could reapply Confucian, like the idea behind Confucianism to any society the way you'd like it to be structured and just like identify what right. the roles everyone has to play are and like, you know,
right.
then like it'd be like, as long as you act this way appropriately in every single interaction, you'll create social harmony and that means everything will flow correctly.
Right. It feels like, it wouldn't be that hard to just change the rules. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
just
but
be like, here's another relationship is just like parent child.
Yeah.
You know, instead of just being like.
But then you have to make decisions about what that means. Like, and if you think about, like, let's just speak in broad stereotypes about these Asian families. Like, you know, the stereotype of like the tiger mom who forces you to do violin and you have to be excellent at all your studies and stuff and you just like do that. You know, I think. I grew up in Vancouver. I knew those people growing up.
Yeah.
You probably knew some of them too, or you've met them or encountered them. Like, that's Confucian.
That's a
Confucian idea. Because, like, I think, like, a Canadian kid would be like, man, I don't fucking want to do violin, which is what I did with piano when I was 12 years old, and I switched to guitar instead. And my parents were like, who are not Confucian, were like, that's cool.
Right. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, man. Follow your
Find
passions.
Yourself.
Yeah, exactly.
And now you're sitting in a closet explaining politics to your best friend.
I know. Aren't you proud, Mom? Dad? I love you both. Thank you for all your tireless support.
Yeah.
One thing I want to just carefully reiterate and make sure we really explain is that, like, it's all about the family and your obligations to the family. And, like, caring for the family is, like, a big deal. It's, like, the fundamental unit of society isn't you, the person, it's the family. Mm. And you have an obligation to act morally and support your family with everything you can.
Mm-hmm.
And then in a way it also then it like moves outwards and it's like society's like a big family. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So it uses the family as kind of like a metaphor for everything because, and that's kind of smart too. Cause like everyone understands the family and how it can be fucked up and how it can work. Right. So it's like, it uses the family as the first thing you have to kind of honor and take care of.
Right.
Yeah.
Interesting.
And this is also why now over the years, like family ties in it, those Asian countries are usually much deeper and much more formal than they are in Canada. Extended families are a much bigger deal in Asian countries, in those Confucian countries, than they are in Western countries.
Right.
You know?
And it's all just about like a different way of looking at the world and being taught to look at the world.
Yeah,
it's like the capitalist realism.
In real world terms, if your fourth cousin knocked on your door and was like, hey, I'm in town, I need a place to stay, I'm just getting set up here. Also, you know, I'm trying to find an apartment, can you spot me a month's rent? You would do it because you have an obligation to keep your family members together. And you would be able to demand that from them too, you know?
Right.
We just don't have a concept like that.
Right.
But then similarly, sometimes in Asian countries, you have a lot less obligation to like people you're not related to who aren't your friends, you really don't, they don't fit into the social model.
Right.
So you don't really have to interact with them a lot.
Right. You're a stranger.
Yeah. One of the ways that this still exists in China is in this idea that's like insanely popular in like investor and business circles, or it's like they're all obsessed with it. It's called Guanxi, which is like, it kind of loosely means like relationships or connections, but more and more often is just called Guanxi as it becomes like a more common idea.
Mm-hmm.
And it basically refers to like the intangible personal, the effect that like personal relationships have on business. So it's like, you can't do business in China unless you have Guanxi with people.
Right.
So like an example of this is,
it's sort of like equity capital. It's like your, it's unseen value.
Yes.
Yeah.
But it's also like, it's the literal existence of like personal and family connections in the entire society. So a good example of this is like McDonald's had this huge flagship restaurant in Beijing. They signed a 20-year lease with the Chinese government, and the Chinese government kicked them out after 2 years and gave the lease to a Hong Kong developer because that guy had more Guanxi. He had like donated to, he was a huge philanthropist. He had paid for all this stuff.
Right.
And so they were like, no, fuck this. You know, like this guy takes precedence over you. And they booted McDonald's out of their flagship ship.
Do you ever hear about that app Clout?
Yes.
Yeah. Where you,
it's like that.
You sign up and it measures, or you don't even sign up. It automatically does it. Just so the listeners know, there's this thing called Clout that you you have to opt out. It's not an opt-in thing. If you have social media, you have a clout score.
Yes.
And it takes all of your accounts and it measures them and gives you a number between 0 and 100. And the higher your clout score, you can get all kinds of benefits from it, like upgrades in hotels and upgrades in planes.
Crazy. Because then people, because like you're an influencer. It's like a quantification of how influencer you are.
That's right. If you're over 90 or whatever, you qualify for all this stuff.
In the modern day, like Guanxi is like, it's like you have your own Guanxi. And so like businesses will hire like people who live in China to work as their business, to be like the people who manage their connections and relationships, because those people specifically have Guanxi. They have good connections with lots of people, good family connections or whatever. Right. It's kind of like nepotism. I was going to say,
that seems like a pretty manipulatable...
Yeah, at its worst, it can be like nepotism, and definitely it is accused of being like that and has been. It can be corrupt, but it can also not be corrupt. The ways that it cannot be corrupt are that it implies like a lot of mutual benefit for people, and corruption is like shameful. Right. And so the like system of enforcement with all of this stuff is basically like public, your own reputation and your public perception. Right. So it's like another term you hear a lot in Confucian countries, especially in Japan or in China, is like face. You know, how much having face.
Are you sure that Confucian didn't invent the internet?
Yeah, I know. Right. It's funny.
That's,
right.
That's what. And things never change, man.
Yeah. So it's like you have faces, like your reputation with people. And if you do something shameful, like suddenly you're out. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And being in or being out is a big part of it. And that comes from Confucianism too. It's like, oh, you're not upholding your obligations. Like you're not a good part of society. I'm going to be dragged down if I'm with you.
Yeah.
That's part of like those relationships that he was talking about. Like if you act badly to your parents, you know, you're losing face. You're shaming everyone and you'll drag the whole family down with you.
Yeah.
If you're shitty to your friends, same thing, right?
Right.
And that's where Confucianism and the business world, that's where they intersect in the modern day. Because it's like either you get Guanxi connections through family, traditional Confucian unit, or through friendship,
right?
A traditional Confucian unit. And there's no other way, right? Like, so if you're trying to start Guanxi from zero, it's almost impossible. You can't just like become friends with somebody. That's why you need insiders to do it, right?
Oh, crazy.
Yeah. So even though...
So it's very stable structure as well.
It's just like, it's one of those classic things where it's like, in the Han Dynasty, like I said, they formally tried to structure their state around, like, let's make this thing happen. Let's do it. Let's make the decisions to do this. Mm. And even though they don't still have, like, those Confucian systems in place, the most famous of which was this exam you had to write to become a bureaucrat, to like work for the government, was this Confucius exam. These existed from, in some form or another, from like literally the Han Dynasty until like late 19th century. Like they existed for most of modern civilization.
Right. Crazy. I mean, yeah, wow.
Yeah. So you'd have to write an exam on Confucius and then get into it. So those kinds of systems don't exist anymore, but the effects on how it shaped society over the years definitely still remain.
I love that kind of shit, man.
Isn't that cool?
I love that. That's
why I was like, this is a whole episode where the shit right here.
Totally. And one of my favorite things to mull over is imagining the different place that someone started.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like, that's why I love traveling. You go somewhere else and you go, oh yeah, it's the same but different, or it's completely different. It's just, you know, if I was born here, this would be normal.
Yeah.
And going to Toronto would be strange. Yeah. You know, I love, just a different way of, it's capitalist realism. It's the, you can't imagine the world that you didn't live in.
Exactly.
That you didn't grow up in.
One of the cooler things about Confucianism is that for him to, the X factor in all of this stuff is learning and knowledge. He loved learning and knowledge. He is like, one of his most endearing things is like, he has a lot of really good quotes about like learning and knowledge. And because, you know, he opened a school, he was a very prolific teacher.
Sure.
And the Confucian system as it existed was like a meritocracy. Kind, like mostly. you could be a low-level person, but if you like trained and learned and got educated and did well on these tests, your station, you could advance your station by just like scholarship and scholastic achievement. Right. Again, something that endures in the culture to the modern day, right? A belief in schooling, a belief in the very like technical test taking and education, right? This was literally a system in place in China for like well over 1,000 years.
Right. Wow.
Yeah. And that's one of the ideas that is cool. It was a meritocracy long before Western civilization had any concept of a meritocracy. But then it was a meritocracy that existed within these like very rigid hierarchies as well. But you could move up in the hierarchy by getting educated and performing well on tests and getting better jobs, better positions.
That's interesting. In which Malcolm Gladwell book? Outliers. Malcolm Gladwell book, Outliers. He's talking about Chinese math scores are like China ranks like really high on math scores. Mm-hmm. And what he derives it to is their words for numbers are easier.
Right.
And so like, you know, we have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, pretty straightforward, all single syllable words. 7. Okay. That's a weird one. 8, 9, 10. And then, you know, 11, 12, what the fuck are those?
Yeah, right.
13, okay, that's like 13, I guess. 14, now we're talking 15, sort of, 16, 17. You know, and it's a lot for a four-year-old to deal with.
Right.
But I don't know the Chinese numbers, but they're all single syllable. And the equivalent, it's instead of going like 11, 12, 13, it's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 1101, 1102, 1103, 1104. So it's just a lot easier to visualize the number in your head.
Right.
So these kids have a better point of view on learning it from an earlier age, and they grow in a different way. Again, I love this stuff. Just the difference, a tiny adjustment in the way you look at the world, the way you interact with the information you have, can have a vast
And I mean, this is what's so cool about history too. It's like Your family's has grown up in a culture for 1,000 years where taking one super important huge test could mean your family was set for life.
Right.
You know, like, and then just because that test isn't there anymore in the modern day, that's your fucking, you know, your Chinese friend's dad being like, you have to get an A plus on every single thing because his father taught him that, you know, guy's father taught him. And then his great, great, great grandfather like sat for the fucking Confucius exam or whatever in the late days of the empire. Right. Like,
right.
That's like a direct historical line to like real world culture from Confucius that still exists.
Yeah. Crazy.
I'm trying to think of if there are any more big things. It's about being moral too, and this was a super interesting idea too that I liked, because I kind of have come to like Zen ideas, and I mostly apply them in like performance technique and stuff, like the idea of like some Zen philosophy and some Zen practice in how I approach performing, which is my job. But the idea that like every single interaction that you have in the day and every single thing you do, you have the chance to like do it excellently and create harmony. This is like a word that's big, social harmony, harmony between people. This is big for Confucius. That's an idea that I get from Zen and that I actually deeply believe, you know, like you have a chance to like, it's kind of like stupid and lame to say out loud and sort of basic sounding, but I do believe this, like you have a chance with like every interaction you perform in a day to like put a little bit of good out into the world.
Right.
And that like ripples sometimes, you know, like, and if every single person just attempts to do that with every interaction, then the world will be good.
Yeah.
That's like
it's the money
fundamental,
in the bank.
That's the fundamental idea of Confucianism. And then, but then the kicker is in what the image of the good world looks like. And in Confucius's world, it was very rigid and very specific. And it doesn't really survive into the modern day very elegantly.
No.
Like another classic one is, this is where I would help me understand it, is that like Confucius got really hung up on like rituals. He was like, it's really important to have rituals and for every, and part of what his thing about hierarchies was like, he had like this whole section of the Analects is like a laundry list of his fucking pissed off grievances at, like, he's like, this warlord is giving an offering at this altar, but only the emperor is supposed to give an offering at that altar. And that is bad. It, like, you know, it's a rejection of how things are supposed to be, right? So that's kind of like where you can see how specific it is to his world.
Right. Interesting.
Yeah.
Man. Isn't it? I mean, like, yeah, it sounds like some of it's great and some of it's pretty antiquated.
Yeah, but I think, like all philosophy, it should be a point of inspiration for real world behavior, you know? And I think this, I'm such a Western individualist. Holy shit. Like, I'm even laughing at myself, but I'm like, just take the parts you like, get rid of the parts you don't like, find yourself.
Hey, man, that's what it all is.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. It's all just, I mean, especially when you hear the arguments that are being had today, and mm-hmm. you like go read some book that's 300 years old, and you're like, oh wow, we've got nicer toys.
Yeah,
that's the difference. Well, and I think, you know what I mean? Like old ideas don't necessarily die.
I think what's interesting about this time right now too is that in our societies, we actually have like competing central visions of society. Like conservative people in the modern day and left wing people are actually trying to do two different things.
Right.
And there is like a struggle for power right now. We're in a transitional period.
Yeah, well, I think that it's like with the advent of the internet, it's as if like if you look at like the internet itself as a sense that the civilization has, mm-hmm. it's as if our civilization can hear for the first time.
Yeah.
You know, and so all at once, the whole world opened its new like world ear, mm-hmm. and they can hear each other for the first time. And for the first time, you know, someone in Alabama's like, wait, like the whole world doesn't think the same things that I think are good, you know, and they rage out against that. And right now we're living in this big, distortion, this big, you know, sound blast of mm-hmm. just everybody realizing that their worldview isn't the only one.
Yeah.
And in many occurrences, most occurrences, it's not the best one. And that's like, and we're mm-hmm. seeing people take sides and be frustrated. And this is why, you know, I feel like I talk about it every week, but this is why I don't like the identity politics thing. It's like too many people are, you know, grabbing hold of their personal history and their personal, the way they were raised and the way they were grown, and like holding it too tight and rejecting mm-hmm. other points of view.
Yeah.
That's what I got to say. So if you're listening to this 300 years from now, you're fucking welcome.
And start a cult.
Start a cult. I am the Jesus 2.0 or whatever.
Jesus 2, the podcast. Here we are.
I don't know.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's a complicated time to be alive, honestly. Like, I don't know. Yeah, I don't know what I'm trying to say. I think I'm going to say, like, I understand identity politics because I think we're desperate for communities. And I think that part of what attracts me, part of what I did find interesting about Confucianism is the notion that you are responsible to a collective. Mm-hmm. You know, we don't, and that's something that we kind of are sorely lacking.
Yeah.
We had Christianity as like invisible glue holding together all of the philosophical ideas of our civilization mm-hmm. here, because they wrote these, you know, founding kind of political ideas into the U.S. Constitution, rationalism, individualism, blah, blah, blah. But it was just taken for granted that also we'd all be Christians and we'd all have Christian morals. And that was like invisibly balancing the scales out. Now that that's not universal anymore, that Christian morals are not guiding everything, I think that these ideas of individualism and rationalism are actually a little bit untethered mm-hmm. and we need to find like collective morals to anchor everybody.
Right.
We don't have a moral language anymore in the West that we all speak. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that's problematic for us. I don't think that there's anything wrong with moralizing. I actually think morals are incredibly important.
Right.
You need to know what's right and wrong and think hard, long and hard about why that is right and wrong.
Wow. So what you're saying is we should help Russia take over the world.
Yeah. That's right. That's right.
One government to rule them all.
Yeah. And the only church will be judo.
Wow. So is there anything else you think you're dying to spill your guts about Confucianism?
I would say, Confucius say, donate to our Patreon.
Yeah, donate to our Patreon.
Yeah, so that was our episode on Confucianism. Yeah. There's many ways you can support us if you'd like to support us. The best of which is we have a Patreon page where you can donate a small amount to us every month. It really helps us out if you do this. It's very, very affordable. There's many options you can do, you know. And if you subscribe to the $5 or up a month tier, you get a bonus episode every week. We've already done bonus episodes on the U.S. midterm elections, and last week on, oh my God, what was it on?
Brexit.
Oh yeah, U.S. midterms last week, the Brexit the week before that.
Yeah.
And that works out to like $1.25 an episode, and it makes a huge difference for us.
It changes the game for us. Of course, Richard and I are recording in a closet. We understand the tethers of poverty.
Yeah.
And if you can't donate money, just a like, a share, and a recommendation to a friend goes a long ass way.
Yeah.
So even just a couple clicks.
And you can write us for feedback, for questions, for comments, or to suggest a future topic.
Hell yeah, baby.
There will be more on China later, but for now, I'm Richard.
I'm Jamie. This has been Explain It to Jamie. Woo!